Hello everyone, my name is Philippe and this is the podcast Life with AI, the podcast that we talk about artificial intelligence in a simpler way. And for today's episode, in the Brazilian version of the podcast, I talked to André Costa. It was a very, very nice conversation. He's an AI expert at IBM. And basically his job at IBM, we talked about a lot of stuff regarding AI, but his job at IBM, he is kind of like an AI expert slash a technical sale, like a pre-sales engineer. And his job, by the way, is a very cool one. He does kind of consulting to different projects on the client in the pre-sale stage. So like they are a team of like four multidisciplinary people. So someone, him as an AI engineer and AI expert. There's also some design people, like some data scientists, and he said something else. There's like very multidisciplinary, and they go to the client to stay like 4 weeks, and the goal is to understand their needs and create an MVP to kind of solve one of their problems. So if the MVP is good and the client is kind of satisfied with this, they're gonna go for like a production level product. And in this step, the client gonna pay. So the 4 weeks that the team is there, the client is not paying. Their goal is really to have a proof of concept, like an MVP that the client will be, you say, oh, come on, it does worth to pay. So this is his job. And honestly, it's very nice because he can see a very wide range of problems and he can propose a lot of different solutions regarding completely different fields. Like he was saying, financial services, like healthcare, and also banking, also engineering. So like he saw a lot of different stuff and they are able to propose AI solutions or like any kind of solutions that are gonna solve the client's problem. So very cool. And unfortunately, he couldn't mention much about some project that he worked with because of NDAs that they need to sign. But there was one project that he mentioned and we discussed about it, that like he did have an NDA, but he could talk about the project with like other words, so he could explain and we could discuss about it. And the project is very, very cool. The idea is like they were in a company that does big projects, such as like architecture projects or civil engineering, some big stuff like to build bridges and so on. And the problem that they were facing is the guys in the company, they receive a lot of PDFs with the project specifications and requirements. So before the use of AI and before the solution that they created, what happened in the process is like those PDFs, they had like 100, 150, 200 pages of specifications and talking to the project. Most of the information is not a specification or requirement. It's just like explaining stuff and like cordialities from what he said. But anyways, there was the need of someone to read all the document and to note in an Excel file everything that is a requirement or a specification in this project. Then once they have everything written in the CSV file, in the Excel file, they need to like classify each requirement into three different n different types. So in this case, I think it's three, but I don't know if it was really three or more. So like civil engineering or like electronical engineering, electro engineering, mechanical engineering, like aeronautics, architecture, maybe this kind of stuff. So classify each requirement to one of these categories. And once they have the category, there was a specialized person from the field saying that if this requirement is doable, if it's feasible or not. So it's a very long and manual process where the first step takes a lot of time because someone needs to read a PDF, a huge PDF, and note it all. Then they need to classify into each one of these classes. And once they know the type, they need to send to the specialist so the guy can analyze the feasibility of this requirement, of this specification. And he said that they had like many, many, many of those documents, and manually they need multiple people to do so. Just before entering in the problem, it's very cool because like we see that across different industries, we have this problem of manual stuff done by humans that can be automated by AI. Like in my job, it's kind of the same. We work with health insurance and I work in the automation of information extraction from the documents. So instead of people taking documents, reading it and putting the information in the system, my algorithms can do it for them and they just need to validate, which is kind of what they did here in a completely different scenario. So instead of someone reading all the document, classifying, they just gonna have an algorithm that's gonna take the information. They're gonna like put this algorithm to classify and then say if it's feasible or not. And I don't know, he didn't enter in those steps, especially because it was an MVP, but our algorithms, they are all metrified by a confidence score. So if the confidence score is high, we go for full automation, which means that people don't need to verify it manually. And if the confidence score is low, someone goes, verify the information. If it's wrong, it modifies and then validate. And the algorithm learns from this feedback, which I imagine would be the final product of this. So as I said, they only do the MVP step. They don't do the full implementation of the project. So they don't see the retraining step of this. But I'm pretty sure that the guys that are going to implement it, they're going to metrify everything using a confidence score. And from this confidence score, they're going to go for full automation or manual validation. And then there is the retraining loop. And every time the algorithm is retrained and gets smarter. So this is the idea. And now let's go for the solution that they proposed. Because the solution is quite clear, but the implementation of the solution is not that easy, especially on which techniques you're going to use. Because one possible technique is to use a large language model into everything. I think it's going to work, but the problem is it's kind of an overkill. So the approach that they had in this project was, let's go for, instead of large language model, a small and specialized language model. So a small and specialized language model can be a version of BERT. A BERT is an encoder-only model that's going to be trained to classify if the document is doing something or not, what is the type of this requirement or not. So let's break down this problem into smaller problems and solve each one of them. This is what I did. So the pipeline that they created was, the first step of the problem is they have a huge PDF, and from this huge PDF, they need to understand in which parts of the PDF there is a requirement or not. Let's go for the overkill solution. I use an LLM to read every single paragraph and say if there is a requirement or not. 150 pages PDF, multiple PDFs, it's going to be expensive. You don't really need to do it. Especially because they have a past, an annotated database of past cases where they have the PDF and the extracted sentences. So they were able to match those extracted requirements in the document. And by matching it, they have an annotated data set. So they can create they can train just a simple classifier. And in this case, a BERT classifier that is an encoder only, that gonna say, okay, this paragraph is important, this paragraph is not important. And of course, they did some pre-processing steps to include the extra information, such as the section and so on. So just a small hint for you, a small tip for you guys. When you're doing this kind of project on text NLP models, as more context you include, the better it is for the model, especially for large language models. So he said that they included also the section, the chapter, to give extra knowledge to the algorithm to decide if this chunk, that is a paragraph-wise chunk, is important or not. So he said that also kind of improved the solution. And I also saw in practice that including this extra knowledge helps the algorithm to make the decision. So first step is really to create this classifier. Once they created the classifier, they were able to automatically extract what is the requirement from this. So from those from those classified requirement types, instead of using an encoder only model to say what is the requirement type, to say civil engineering, electrical engineering, or mechanical engineering, what they did is that they trained a decoder only model. So the decoder only model, instead of classifying, it's gonna say the name of the class. It's another way of doing classification. And he said that the technique that they used to kind of fine-tune this decoder only model was a soft prompting technique. That is basically, you're gonna include the prompt in the tokens, and you're gonna train these tokens into a new embedding space. So this is a soft prompting. It's a way of fine-tuning decoder only models. And we discussed that. I know this paper, I didn't remember when he said the name, but when he explained that, I think I read this paper. And another way of doing so is using QLoRA to fine-tune the model. And I think that in the LoRA or QLoRA, both, it's kind of the same, but so basically LoRA is a way of fine-tuning, and QLoRA is the quantized way of applying LoRA to fine-tune. So I think I remember in LoRA's paper that they show improvement against this soft prompting technique, but he said that this soft prompting technique is way faster to train, and the results were quite the same, so they went for this one. So that's why. And also, a lot of stuff that they were doing, they were using proprietary models from IBM or proprietary techniques from the IBM cloud. And he said that in the IBM cloud, model of AI, they have this soft prompting technique already coded, so they just need to call it and it automatically trains. So for them, it does make sense to use. We do fine-tune LLMs in my company, and we are using LoRA or QLoRA, depending on the application. Yeah, so this was the second step. Instead of using an encoder-only model to classify between the different types, they were using a decoder-only model with the soft prompting technique. And then the last step of this problem is indeed to classify if the requirement is feasible or not. Like he said, multiple categories, so like it's impossible to be done, it can be done, but it's not easy, it's easy to be done. So I think these three categories, or there is a fourth one that I don't remember. And again, like they could use an encoder-only model, they could use a decoder-only model, but what they did in this case was way smarter. So they used a technique that later was called by OpenAI MedPrompt. That is a few-shot learning technique using a RAG. But in their case, they used something even smarter, that is a hierarchical RAG, and I'm gonna better explain. So like, let's dive into it step by step. What is this idea of fine-tuning an LLM with a few shot? So you don't need to retrain the weights of the model, but when you use LLMs, those models, they have a capacity to learn from the prompt. So basically, learning from the prompt is you're gonna give examples, past examples with the output, and the model will see, okay, so if they did this in this example here in the past, I'm gonna take into account to do in this new example here. And the idea of doing this few shot with RAG is you have a huge database of past cases. Using RAG, you're gonna find similar cases, and you're gonna include in your prompt those similar cases with the output of the expert. So he said that I think that the optimal number was 3 to 5 examples that they were putting in the few shot. And by including these 3 to 5 examples, the model was able to like destroy the encoder only or the decoder only using this few shot. And why did I say that they used a hierarchical RAG instead of traditional RAG? Because they already know the type of this requirement, if it's an electrical, mechanical, or civil. So why do you need to search on the full vector database space to perform your RAG if you already know that this information will be similar to information in the same type? So that's why, and then the query will go way faster because you're only searching in a smaller space. And he said that, well, this improved a lot the results. And honestly, it was a very smart technique, and they did it before the MedPrompt paper was available. So for those that don't know, MedPrompt is exactly this technique that I just explained. And it was funny because when Google launched the Gemini Ultra, they said, yeah, we beat a GPT-4 in this medical datasets. And then 1 or 2 days later, OpenAI came with a paper called MedPrompt saying, yeah, guys, you beat us, but not really, because in our benchmark, we were in 0 shot. In your benchmark, you are doing 5 shot. So let us do 5 shot with this technique here that they called MedPrompt. And then they beat Gemini Ultra using this technique on GPT-4. So basically, they have a great stuff in-house that they don't publish. And then when someone else, like in the concurrence, publish something, they need to say, okay, just to showcase that we are the best, check here what we have internally, but we didn't talk to you because I don't know why. So yeah, this was like most of the stuff that we talked. It was a very nice conversation. Like, unfortunately, probably you guys cannot listen the episode in Portuguese because you don't understand. But André is a very, very nice guy, and he knows a lot. Like, we entered deeply into some details. And what was also nice is that he's a listener of the podcast. Like, he was sitting some of the episodes, and it was very nice. So yeah, that's it. And well, something interesting about André too, that he contributes a lot of for the community. And he has a project called Brains. And the idea of this project is to produce content in Portuguese. So it's true that like most of the content on the internet is in English and also Chinese, but on Chinese, no one that don't speak Chinese has access. And I know it because I have a guy that is a Chinese in my team. And the amount of stuff that he can find that we cannot find, like, it's crazy. There is a whole world on the internet that is in Chinese, and people that are not Chinese, we don't even know that it exists. So he created this project called Brains that is kind of a towards data science, so where people can write content in Portuguese, and everybody wins from it, because like in Brazil, unfortunately, most of people don't speak English. So I think the data is like 5% of the country speaks English, and only 1% 100% is fluent. So as most of the content on deep learning and AI is in English, most of the population don't have access. And then you might say, no, come on, educated people with higher education, they do speak, but not all of them. Like I did university in Brazil, the best federal university in the country, and a lot, maybe most of my friends, they don't, unfortunately, which is like, unfortunately, the situation in Brazil. But anyways, so it's a very nice thing that he's doing, like contributing to the community and especially to our country. I also try to do so with my podcast. So it was a very nice conversation to have someone with me that is very technical and that also have this will to contribute to our country. So yeah, that's it, guys. I'm going to put Andre's social media here on LinkedIn. So if you guys want to contact him, maybe I can put also the Brains link. So if you know someone that is a Portuguese speaker, maybe let them know if they want to write for the Brains. It's also very cool. And that's it. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to follow also the podcast on social media. On Instagram, we are podcast.lifewithai. On LinkedIn, we are Life with AI. And that's it. See you guys.